Gary pours all the candles in his shop. I've seen it done. So the scent is as strong
as 1470. Good morning, good morning, good morning, Brad Davis, Mary Jones, with you. Whistling again.
I'm trying.
You're driving me crazy.
I'm not going to allow you to squelch my enthusiasm.
I want to read something. Tom Given, Marine Rifle Platoon Commander in Vietnam, wrote this. My platoon fought side by side with Ord Elliott's. Our Marines were some of the finest, bravest men I have ever met. And war is a life-altering experience, not fully understood, by those who have not been in combat. Ord has found the words to convey the feelings and thoughts that echo my own, but have been difficult for me to express for many decades. I was only able to talk with my wife about Vietnam 10 years ago. Veterans of any war can find their voice in the warrior's silence. By Ord Elliott. Semper Fi, Ord.
Good morning.
Ord, good morning. Thank you so much for joining us. Ord, a Princeton grad, a Marine Rifle Platoon Commander in Vietnam, as Brad mentioned, PhD from Purdue University. I have to say, Ord, that I am honored on a daily basis to work with two former Marines. Our producer, Tony Borelli, was in the Marines. Brad was as well. And thank you for all your service.
Well, thank you, Brad and Tony, then, as well.
I just couldn't help but think about you and how you expressed all of this. Here it was, Princeton, Purdue, the Corps, and you sound terrific, Ord. You sound terrific.
Well, thank you. And what vintage were you, Brad?
I was back in 53, 54, that era.
A Korean veteran.
No, I was not in Korea.
Uh-huh.
I was not in Korea. But that was the era that I was in.
I understand.
Well, and so your book, you know, which congratulations, by the way, The Warrior Silence, boy, it is getting two thumbs up from everyone, Ord. And you talk about your experiences, and you also talk about your thoughts in terms of returning vets today. Touch upon that a little bit in terms of, are we doing enough for them? Let's get right to it.
Well, first of all, expecting that a veteran coming home, particularly with his family, that everything is going to be just the same as before, may just push them away. My own experience and many other veterans that I have talked to about it will say when we join, often we have a romantic notion of the warrior. I call it for myself the John Wayne experience because he was, you know, the sands of Iwo Jima.
That's right. That.
When I experience, of course, is the ugliness of combat and the incredible feelings of sadness and loss when my fellow Marines were killed. And in my platoon, everyone was killed or wounded at some point in time. We turned over several times. So there was a lot of loss, including one of my very good friends that I had gone to college with who died next to me. So I began to feel a bit empty inside, and I knew I was different. But I wasn't really sure what that was, and it was very difficult to talk about. So coming home, getting back to veterans coming home in general, I think just knowing that they have experienced something horrible and unspeakable, but not expecting them to talk about it and not trying to, quote, make them feel better, just listening, being there with them as they are now, is the best way to reconnect. Because it's very likely they won't talk about it, even though there may be a lot going on inside, and even though they're not sure what that means. From my point of view, I was lucky. I had a Marine uncle who had fought in Iwo Jima and Korea. So when I came back, I hung out with him. And we didn't talk about war much, but just knowing that he knew and hanging out with him was a healing effect for me. So I think that it is important and could be very helpful for returning veterans to spend time with older veterans that have been in combat and hang out with them. I think it's a very healing experience.
Well, when you mentioned when you came back from Vietnam, boy, we all remember that that particular war was one that wasn't supported by everyone emotionally. Talk about your return personally, Ord, and how that was, and how wonderful that you had your uncle to spend some time with.
When I came back, of course, a lot of the troops were getting spit on and called baby killers, and that was not a good experience. But I was lucky in the sense that I had other things I could do. And, of course, one of the things that I ended up doing was to write about it. I had this incredible urge to write, and so that made it easier for me. That was how I dealt with all of this. However, many of the Marines in my platoon have had a different experience, and they are still bitter about how they've been treated. Although all of us today are very grateful that our men and women in service coming back are being appreciated for what they've done, it still doesn't change that sort of bitter feeling back there and then. And I have, for example, my radio operator, who I've been very close to since I came back, he's been 100% PTSD. Of course, PTSD wasn't even a term until 1980, I think. But, I mean, he spent the first 15 years at home with his combat boots on, sort of hunched over, expecting, that's at night he slept with him, expecting to be attacked. And he's basically had a fairly useless life because of that. He just never kind of recovered. And he carries as part of that bitterness. I don't know that there's any cure for that.
Other than, I guess, getting hooked up with a good therapist?
Well, he's been taken care of by the VA, but I think we're doing a much better job with our veterans as they come home today in terms of preparing them for what they might deal with. But probably it's not enough because we still have a higher incidence of PTSD. The suicide rate is going up. They do have some orientation when they come home, but is it really enough? I think of going into the service, you know, we go to boot camp and it's very structured and you learn how to be a Marine or a soldier and everything that goes with that. Perhaps we need a more structured and lengthier program when they return to deal with these things. However, let me say there's no magic bullet. There's no 5-point plan that's going to cure all of these things. And this can come hit you later in life. My best squad leader, who was very successful in the Marine Corps, had a successful business life, had a great family, children. 20 years later, he began hearing grenades and combat around him. And within a few weeks, he'd taken a shotgun and killed himself.
Mm. Mm.
That was 20 years later.
Wow.
One other story, a very good friend who was a platoon commander as well, and he'd gone to Harvard, bright guy. He lost both his legs in Vietnam. But he came back and he was just so positive, had a great career in business. In his 50s, he became a minister, Episcopalian minister, helping other people. But when Iraq and Afghanistan started, he felt such sadness for our troops that were being killed that one day he just took a pistol and shot himself in the heart. So how do you explain that? He was 60 years old. How do you explain these things that emerge so late? You can't really control all of that. They're fewer and far between, but they do happen. And I will tell you, having written this book, many of the veterans that I do know who have read it have come up and told me about the angst they live with. They don't have PTSD. They're not suicidal. It's not that. It's just that there are things that they carry with them that bother them that they don't talk about. They just don't talk about. They have a hard time talking about, but they still carry that with them. There's really not a complete, as I say, 5-point cure-all for the experience that people have in combat. And while our country today is so appreciative of the troops coming home, I don't think folks fully understand the baggage that you carry with you as a function of combat. It just doesn't necessarily go away. It impacts people in different ways. I would also add, in a way, being in combat's a blessing for me, because you understand what combat is and what that means and how horrible it is. I would hope, frankly, that the politicians in the world that lead us into combat would have had this kind of experience, so they think twice about what that means and what other alternatives there might be.
The horrors of war.
Why did you select, why did you select the Marine Corps?
Well, I have to go back to my uncle, who was a hero of mine. I wanted to be a Marine since I was a little kid. Interesting is that about 5 years after I was back, when I went to school, by the way, I was in Greenwich as a little boy in Connecticut. We wrote all our papers and math and everything, was put in a little pamphlet at the end of the year. And I got all this stuff. My mother dumped this all when I was about 25, and I looked at it. And one of the compositions I wrote when I was in third grade, I'm 8 years old, one of my first compositions was about what I'll do when I'll grow up. And it was about three lines, and something like this. When I grow up, I'll probably go into the Marine Corps. If I go into the Marine Corps, I'll have to go to war. It won't be fun.
Now, wow. You were three. How old were you?
Eight.
8 years old.
I had already been influenced by my uncle, let me tell you that. But I was looked at that, and I'm surprised. You don't say, well, that's precognition. Who knows? But I certainly was inclined at an early age to do that. I was totally surprised by that. I thought I had made the decision when I went to college to go into the military, but maybe I made it earlier in life.
Were you drafted?
No, I signed up.
No, Marines aren't drafted.
Have the draft during Vietnam.
They did. Yes, because I remember back in that era, sure.
Yeah, but no, I had wanted to go in as a freshman. Actually, I signed up to for NROTC, and I had knee problems all my life, and I had an accident, had surgery, had an injury on athletics, and I was medically discharged. So then I had to sneak in through another program to get back in the Marines. I wanted to do it so much. And so I was commissioned when I graduated from Princeton. And we, at the time, and we go to basic school at Quantico, and you're trained to be a platoon commander. And those with the highest marks won the award of going to Vietnam. We wanted to go. We cheered when we were given that assignment.
Can you stay with us, Ord, for a while?
Of course.
Thank you.
We have to take a break, but we have a few more. Questions. If you have any questions for our guest, give us a call. We'll be back.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Foster. It's back to work at the port here.
And a very special guest.
And a very, very special guest brought to you by the Connecticut Lottery.
Yes, the
new
Connecticut
sponsor.
Lottery.
Ord Elliott. Ord, I just am fascinated listening to you and being a former Marine myself, and I was looking through your book, and I came across the picture of you and Dave a month before Dave was killed on Okinawa. And I'm looking at that picture now, and the reason I mention it is I was transferred to Camp McGill, Japan, from Camp Pendleton out on the coast, and I spent some time at Camp McGill, Japan, and 2 months after I was there, the Marine Corps, 7th Marines, put together a task force, and we made, believe it or not, an amphibious landing on Okinawa. And when I look at this picture and think of you were in all that combat, and when we arrived there early in the morning and the ships, we were ready to go down the side of the ships onto the landing craft. That's the way we did it then. I was thinking, my God, here we're going into this island and so many died there. And I was thinking of that through the whole amphibious landing. It was a big practice landing. And as I look at this book and see your picture with your buddy, I can't help but think about that, and I can see it right now, believe it or not.
Well, I understand that. They come back, Dave Hackett, who the book is in memory of him, was also a friend at college, a year older than me, and I revered this guy, and he died next to me. He was killed actually standing up to try and identify where snipers were coming from when we were ambushed. And that really changed me. Someone so close, basically killed right next to me. That was a turning point for me.
Wow.
Talk about that Ord, if you will. You touched upon it earlier. Ord Elliott, author of The Warrior's Silence, wanted to give the title of your book again. You touched upon it earlier, but, you know, thinking about a lot of warriors, a lot of returning vets, a lot of macho, and I hope that's an okay word to use, men in particular, and not taught to really talk about their feelings too much, are they? I mean, it's not about venting emotionally, so it's more about, you know, being stoic and keeping things pent up, and that probably doesn't help the dealing with the return, does it?
It probably doesn't. I know it doesn't. Macho is probably the right term. But I think it's also true of some of the women who are returning. And it may be more difficult for them because there's an expectation that they're going to be the caregivers and the emotional support in a family. And they'll carry the same angst with them. It's difficult to talk about because it's hard to know what to talk about, too. You know you're different. You know there's a kind of emptiness that I talk about in the book, this feeling of it. How do you talk about emptiness?
I know.
How do you talk about... there was a time when I felt like I had lost my soul, like I was just a cardboard structure that was gone. How do you explain that? Well, I wrote a lot, so I'm able to talk about that. But most folks, it's hard to talk about. How do you capture that? What is empty?
Now, Ord, Mary, just mentioned women. And why don't you tell Ord the project that you and I have undertaken in the near town of Manchester?
Yes, a suburb of Hartford. Ord, Brad and I have gotten involved with Purple Heart Homes. You may be familiar with them. They provide homes for disabled returning vets. And their first woman returning vet from Iraq, first in terms of getting a home from Purple Homes, is in Manchester. Her name is Sandra Lee, and she suffers from PTSD. Brad and I have had the distinct honor of meeting her twice and working with her, and we're helping them to raise money for her home.
All right. Do you find that there's an expectation that she'd be an emotionally supportive person, despite the fact that she obviously has the same trauma that men have?
Well, I think what you mentioned is just so true.
Yes.
In terms of...
That's what reminded... What he just said reminded
brought her to mind.
Me of her.
Yes. And as hopefully everyone knows, you know, sufferers of PTSD, they look just fine. There are no visible signs.
And she has, or she carries with her all the time. We have what we call listener luncheons for our listeners at different venues in the state of Connecticut. And recently we had her at one of our luncheons, and she has her little dog with her.
It's a,
all the time.
Yeah, it's a service dog.
A service dog.
Yeah, makes her just feel more relaxed and calm.
Sure.
Yes.
That's wonderful. Well, that's what I say when it comes back, just sort of being there with the person and letting them be the way they are is in many ways more helpful than trying to fix them or trying to make them feel better. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, and that's what I was just going to ask. For folks listening today to Ord Elliott, author of The Warrior Silence, who may have a vet in their family, they may be married to one, what advice do you give the family members, Ord?
Well, again, I don't think they should expect that they're going to be happy. They should listen. They should pay attention. And in the cases of the situation where PTSD comes later in life, which it could, they need to be aware of the warning signs, you know, nightmares, flashbacks, discussion about grenades, battle, things like that. If they can get them hooked up with the VA or older veterans, I just think that's such a great way to come back and to find a way to heal. But you can't make them do it. There's just not a 5-point plan that's going to make that perfect. I think you just have to be patient. I think you have to be there with them, be there for them, not try to cure them, because in some ways there's there's never really a cure. You carry the baggage with you, and it impacts people at different levels. I mean, just because you have PTSD doesn't mean, or don't have it, doesn't mean you don't carry something with you where you have nightmares. I had nightmares for years, the same nightmare. It doesn't mean you don't have flashbacks occasionally. For several years after I came home, I couldn't walk down the street without looking for an ambush around every corner. I knew it was crazy, but I couldn't stop myself. So, I mean, that's not something I could stop.
Yeah.
Where do you live now, Ord?
I live in Woodside, California. I'm in the hills above Palo Alto and Stanford University.
Well, see, I don't consider that crazy at all.
No.
And I don't come from a military family, but just thinking about your experiences as a Marine rifle platoon commander in Vietnam, it makes all the sense in the world to me why anyone having experienced, endured that, would come home and be looking over their shoulders constantly.
Yeah, and I say that's not PTSD, but there are symptoms, there are things that you carry with you that are short of that, that a lot of veterans carry with them, I think most to some extent. So there's a range of behaviors and feelings and emotions, and some all the way out, where you really are immobilized and can't do much of anything, and it can last for a long time.
Ord, how many soldiers were in your platoon?
I had a reinforced rifle platoon. I had with 60, but we went into some of the, as Brad said, actually we went to, on an aircraft carrier, helicopter carrier, and went into various big battles. And my platoon turned over a number of times. I think before I left, there was practically no one in it that I knew. In one battle, I went in with 60 and came out with 6. It was just an incredible combat that we were in.
Oh.
So I have in some ways no idea how many over time that were in my platoon. Certainly over 100.
Boy, to have you on the radio, on our program, and to talk like this, Ord, I'll tell you, you are a very special person.
If you ever have business or personal reasons to come to Connecticut, please hang on to our number and let us know. We are right in Hartford, and we would love to meet you in person, love to share the studio with you and talk more again if you ever find yourself in Connecticut.
Well, I may well, and thank you. I would enjoy doing that.
Oh, that would be such an honor for us. The title of the book, The Warrior's Silence, it is everywhere at this point, Ord?
It's right now it's on Amazon. It will be on Barnes & Noble. It's sort of out. It will be another month or so in all of the e-book stores. It's not there just yet.
That's wonderful.
Do you have a website you'd care to share?
Yes. It's just ordelliott.com, and it's got some more data about the book and also links to buy it.
Now, it's Ord, my friends, and his first name is spelled O-R-D, Ord Elliott, E-L-L-I-O-T-T. Fabulous. It's an honor. Whoa.
Ord, thank you so much for writing this book. It's a message that an awful lot of folks need to hear, and not a lot of people have the perspective that you have and would be able to write it from that perspective. So thank you so much.
And Ord, I want you to know that this conversation affected me emotionally today. That's how proud I am to have talked with you.
Semper Fi, Brad.
Semper Fi.
Ord, thank you so much. We'll stay in touch.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ooh. 60 in his platoon when he went in, came out with 6.
With 6. Unbelievable.
Open phones when we return. This is your Morning Magazine with Brad Davis and Mary Jones. Our number is 1-888-574-2723. Mancini Peppers, well, we know they have been around for an awful long time. You could say about 90 years or so. And I do love them. Well, the thing about Mancini sweet roasted peppers, and I grew up on them, grew up in New Britain, that's where they really started.
That's where they started.
But they have just evolved into so many specialty items.
And you've made a lot of recipes using the Mancini product. I love the sweet roasted peppers.
They have a pesto. They have a soup, which is wonderful.
Fabulous.
They have a dip. It's all on their website, by the way, mancinifoods.com. Their Jardiniere, we've talked about that, Brad. That is their newest product.
The newest product, Jardiniere. That's a Chicago-style vegetable.
That's right.
And delicious. I like the mild.
It comes in hot and mild. Yeah. I buy the mild also. That's a mix of carrots, cauliflower, and peppers. And hopefully everyone knows at this point the Mancini products are available everywhere. And the great thing is if your supermarket, the one you normally shop at, does not carry the one you're looking for, all you need to do is ask the manager. They're at Stop and Shop, ShopRite, Big Y, IGA.
And, of course, Guido.
Of course.
Guido.
Good morning,
yes.
Guido.
Good morning over there
at
in Manchester,
Park.
Highland Park. He is something. He takes care of all the Mancini products and all four Highland Park stores.
They are healthy. They're domestically grown. Their website, again, mancinifoods.com. And as Brad always says,
always Mancini it.
Hartford Hawks men's basketball is back on the air. Hi, everybody. I'm the voice of the Hawks, Jeff Dooley. Join me and Randy Levine for another exciting...
Been on the show a couple of times. He is a vet himself. He is a licensed therapist in Manchester, and he specializes in helping returning vets get reacclimated to society. His name is Bob Caffrey. You've heard him on the show, and his business is Caffrey Counseling. His website, CaffreyCounseling.com. So I wanted to mention him one more time.
Okay, and this is Wednesday, right?
Wednesday is, I get roped into this, Ronald Reagan Day.
Yep, you bring the book in.
I do.
It's on my desk all the time. This is a piece that President Reagan delivered at the Oxford Union Society in Oxford, England, December 4th. 1992, and this will give you a good read of what President Reagan was all about. He wrote, "I consider it a tragedy that at some campuses in my own country, those who hold unfashionable ideas are hooted off the stage or denied a forum in the first place. What a travesty of intellectual inquiry. What a perversion of the great, chaotic, yet essential marketplace of ideas that we call democracy. But then I have always believed at home and abroad that the only cure for what ails democracy is more democracy."
Oh, goodness.
Is that a great one?
I love that last line.
Yeah.
Just that last line could stand alone.
There was nobody like him.
1992.
He said December the 4th at Oxford, England.
Ronald Reagan. All right, well, that's enough of him for another week. No, I'm teasing.
You are. Really.
We have Jim Frey. He'll sneak into the show sometime between now and then. Mark my word. Jim from Bristol. Good morning.
Hello, Jim.
Good morning. I'd like to make my observation of about veterans' conditions.
Yes.
Like the last speaker was talking about.
Yes, Jim.
Well, one of the things is that sometimes it's hard to get, a lot of veterans have a hard time finding help. And did you know that that employees and other organizations, they have a discrimination law, but it doesn't say that discriminating against veterans is illegal. And even if you take it to the top, they won't acknowledge it.
Well, veterans certainly are not one of the protected classes. You're absolutely right. What are you referring to specifically, Jim, when you say they're discriminated against in the workplace?
Well, make no mistake about it. There's a lot of resistance towards veterans, especially in the workplace, especially places where at-will type of policy is employed. And a lot of veterans, and I know these veterans, I'm not talking about for myself, I'm talking about us, not just myself, that we don't get equal rights, and mainly because there's a resistance to people that just don't like veterans.
Well,
and
you know,
when you go through the system,
it can't be
like I have and others that when you go to the state, you don't get any support. And I gave you the example about discrimination.
Well, I know so many veterans have worked on the Veterans Day parade and can tell you from my point of view, I don't see the discrimination that you are talking about. I have worked with
veterans. Well, those veterans that hear me now, maybe they'll call you and they'll let you know what they've gone through.
Well, what kind of discrimination?
Because there's a silent majority out there.
Can you tell me?
A lot of people that do good for the veterans. There's no, you know, there's no mistake about it.
Well, there is.
But there's also a resistance, especially the veterans that really need the help. I was sent to a few agencies, this is in the past, that said that they could help me. And both the information I got from veteran advocacy groups was wrong information, and I had to make hundreds and hundreds of calls before I could get help. And there's other veterans that are in the same situation, too. And some of those veterans have mental issues, and it just drives them to, let's say, the worst situation possible. And that's the silent majority.
Okay. All right.
Well, and it's interesting, Jim and Brad. You and I had talked about this maybe a couple weeks ago, and Jim, you started off talking about veterans in the workforce, in the workplace. I do recall when I was a recruiter, and I've not been a recruiter for 10 years now, but when I was, I would often meet with veterans and present their background to my clients, companies that were looking to hire, and I would emphasize the veterans' leadership experiences, the team building experience. There were an awful lot of companies who did not want to interview veterans. They wanted people coming out of the corporations. They thought it would be too much of a change to go from the military to a corporate environment. I tried very hard to convince them that these would be wonderful employees. Sometimes I was successful, sometimes I wasn't. But beyond that, Jim, I don't know if that's what you're referring to. That's in terms of getting a job, but not discrimination.
Like I said, when employees have this at-will employment policy, and not only just for veterans,
that's the state of Connecticut.
For any reason. And a lot of veterans get caught up in this trap.
Yeah.
Well, I will say this to you, Jim. I, myself, okay, will do anything I have to do to help a veteran. I've always been that way. And if I see anything that you have described, I would be the first to speak out. I promise you that.
Jim, thank you so much for the
call.
Thank
you for the call, Jim. Thank you.
And that is, not to read between the lines of what Jim was saying, but just thinking about what he might be referring to and getting back to Ord Elliott's conversation, the help that vets are getting with different organizations and even the VA. We've had lots of people on the show saying that the VA is wonderful, but might not do enough.
Yes.
In all areas.
Yes.
So not to imply at all that returning vets have everything they need when they need it. I don't think that's the case.
I agree with
you. And that could be what Jim is alluding to.
I agree.
Also.
And you could feel Jim's emotion.
Yeah, exactly.
You could feel his emotion. You could feel his hurt. There's no question. Came right through.
Yeah. So that's.
But
I
can only
real.
Speak for myself, Mary, and you know me well enough to know that I would never, ever allow it if I ever knew about it.
No, oh, absolutely. You would, and have for years and years, Brad, done everything possible to correct something like that if you were to be informed of it. Oh, goodness. We have a little ways to go, I think, certainly in that regard. So tomorrow, speaking of going, you're going to be going downtown tomorrow.
Yes, going to be downtown,
right
the Hartford stage. Yes, A Christmas Carol.
Your 8 to 9 hour of your show is going to be devoted, no commercials. It's
no
going
commercials,
to be just the
no
Christmas
sports,
Carol
just
broadcast.
The broadcast with the actors, the sound effects. I really look forward to it. And we're going to be selling tickets at a discount price.
And you'll be talking about that tomorrow.
Beginning at 6 o'clock, yeah.
Really? Oh, that's wonderful. Well, I will see you at 9:20-ish.
9:20.
Let's remember that life is but a moment.
This is the Talk of Connecticut, WDRC AM.